Frank Muir goes into Rivers and Lakes and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
An attendant at a boating lake was calling out through his loud hailer, "Come in, number 91! Your time's up, number 91! Can you hear me, 91? Oh, you're in trouble, number 16. Reg,
huh?
I went fishing with my wife yesterday.
Oh, yeah? Any luck?
No, I'm going back to using worms again now. Do you know what you call little baby rivers that run into the Nile?
No, Alfred, I don't. What do you call little baby rivers that run into the Nile?
Juveniles. Two Irishmen hired a boat one day, went out fishing on a lake. They had a marvelous time and came back with their boat loaded with fish. Oh, it's a great place. Great place we found there. Great place. We must try and get back there tomorrow. But how will we know we found the right place? His mate said, "Don't worry. I chalked across on the side of the boat where we were catching all the fish." That's no good at all, Pat. Suppose we don't get the same boat tomorrow. Little village idiot sat dangling his fishing line down a manhole. The vicar came by, gave the boy a pound and said, "How many have you caught today, son?" The boy said, "You'll be the tenth." A Scot on holiday in London was on a bus and having a furious argument with the conductor. "I tell you," shouted, "the fare's only 10p. "No, it's not," the conductor shouted, "it's 20p. And he lost his temper, and as they were crossing the bridge, he grabbed the Scotsman's suitcase and flung it into the Thames. "Oh, no," the Scotsman said. "You've gone too far. First you tried to overcharge me for my fare, and now you've drowned my wee boy."
Lakes and rivers hold a magnetic attraction for many of us. Apart from their practical uses, they have an appeal which is almost mystical. In the words of Henry Van Dyke,
"A river is the most human and companionable of all inanimate things. It has a life, a character, a voice of its own, and is as full of good fellowship as a sugar maple is of sap."
It's not surprising that in the minds of many, rivers are associated with ideas of peace and repose. Here's an extract from a letter to a magazine.
"Friends of mine asked the hotel for a quiet room overlooking the river. The hotel provided one with a tranquil view over the gentle stream, the water meadows, and the bridge. They did not mention, however, that the bridge was going to be blown up by demolition squads at 7:15 the next morning."
Some knowledge of our inland waterway system does nobody any harm and is something that's dinned into children at school. Here's an extract from a third former's essay.
"The two most important rivers in Scotland are the Firth and the Forth."
Rivers are so important in human lives that many songs have been written in their praise.
I'd like to sing an old river song in honor this week of National Mississippi Riverboat Paddle Wheel Week. Mr. May, if you please.
Very polite, Mr. Freeburg.
Thank you.
Old Man River, that old.
All right, sweetly, polite as I dig, but what in the world is wrong with Old Man River?
The word old has a connotation some of the more elderly people find distasteful. I would suggest you make the substitution, please.
I suppose you insist.
Precisely. You may continue.
Okay, music.
You forgot to say thank you.
Yes, okay. Thank you, Mr. Tweedley.
You're quite welcome, I am sure.
Elderly man river, that elderly man river, he must know something, but he don't say nothing.
All right, hold it, fellas. Now what, Tweedley?
The word something? You left off the G.
But that's authentic. Something. Something. That's the way the people...
I'm sorry.
...talk down there.
What? The home is a classroom, Mr. Freeburg.
I know you said that.
Keep in mind the tiny tots. And furthermore, think back. You'll recall that you said, "But he don't say nothing."
Mm-hmm.
Now, really, Mr. Freeburg, that's a double negative. Do you mean he does say something?
No, I just wasn't using my head, I guess.
I mean, after all, it should be grammatically correct, keeping in mind...
the tiny tots, yes.
You probably mean he doesn't say anything.
I Suppose I mean that, yes, I guess. All right, fine. You win. All right, Billy, music. Thank you.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
Elderly man river, that elderly man river, he must know something, but he doesn't say anything. He just keeps rolling. He just keeps rolling along. Doesn't plant potatoes. He doesn't plant cotton cotting. And them seeds, those that plant them, are soon forgotting. But elderly man river, he's got to keep rolling along.
Excellent. Thank you.
You and me.
The tiny tots again, was it?
Exactly.
Sorry about that. Here we go.
Oh,
we got by that one. Take your finger off the button, Mr. Tweedley. We know when we're licked. Well, that concludes Elderly Man River. Oh, yes, and thank you for being with us, Mr. Tweedley.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
Stan Freeberg. Rivers, of course, are potentially dangerous. It's as well the public should be warned of the hazards. Here's a sign from a riverbank in Ireland.
Beware, when this notice board is covered, the river is at danger level.
Another one from Yorkshire.
Danger. When red flags are flying, flooding of the river is imminent, and members of the public must not leave the river banks.
One from an Indian riverboat.
Life belt. In case of drowning, throw up.
But for those who are prepared to brave the hazards and who like messing about in boats, rivers and lakes can offer a great deal of pleasure. Enthusiasts for the sport scan the newspaper's small ads in search of bargains like this one from the Yorkshire Post.
For sale, doctor's sailing dinghy and accessories. Doctor, no further use.
There's an ad from New Zealand.
She's the answer to your prayers. She handles like a dream, and she's inflatable.
There's another from a Somerset paper.
For sale, fiberglass canoe. Suit beginner with two seats.
Canoeing, of course, is a sport which inspires great enthusiasm in its devotees.
Hello, Ron.
Ahoy there, Charles.
Well, don't think of the marvelous idea of mine. It comes from the Lake District.
I do, Ron. It's very pretty.
No, this is alive. Camping out here beside the lake and taking our canoes out every day.
As I know, it's all exhausting, Ron. Of course, I had other ideas for holiday, but when you suggested the lakes, I decided to fall in with you.
Well, you shouldn't stand up and wave to everybody.
I just can't seem to get the hang of this thing. Canoe.
There you are, an old paddling wag. Never mind, you'll soon get used to it. After all, Charles, canoeing is the coming thing.
Oh, I don't doubt that, Ronald, for a moment, but don't you think you've rather overdone it?
Nonsense! When one takes up a pursuit like canoeing, one has to do it properly.
Oh, I do see that, yes, I do indeed, yes. But all the same, Ronald, I feel we've gone just a little too far.
What do you mean?
Was it absolutely necessary to wear feathered headdresses and war paint?
Hugh Paddock and Kenneth Williams, beyond our ken. Another popular water sport is fishing, or angling, which was defined thus by Arthur Young in 1787.
Angling, incessant expectation and perpetual disappointment.
Lord Byron described angling as a solitary vice, and Hamilton Clay Jr. had this to say on the subject.
Fishing is simplicity itself. All you have to do is to get there yesterday when the fish were biting.
Let's hear a poem on the subject by Thomas Hood, The Angler's Farewell.
Well, I think it is time to put up. For it does not accord with my notions. Wrist, elbow, and chine, stiff from throwing the line, to take nothing at last by my motions. I ground bait my way as I go, and dip it at each watery dimple. But however I wish to inveigle the fish, to my gentle they will not play simple. Though my float goes so swimmingly on, my bad luck never seems to diminish. It would seem that the bream must be scarce in the stream, and the chub, though it's chubby, be thinnish. Not a trout there can be in the place, not a grayling or rudd worth a mention. And although at my hook with attention I look, I can ne'er see my hook with attention. I've tried all the water for miles, till I'm weary of dipping and casting, and hungry and faint, let the fancy just paint what it is without fish to be fasting. And the rain drizzles down very fast, while my dinner time sounds from a far bell. So wet to the skin, I lean back to my inn, where at least I'm sure of a barbell.
Worth a tentative clap, I think. That was Tom Hood from Beyond Our Pun. And after that, I think we should hear from an expert on one particular freshwater creature.
I've always wanted to be an expert on tadpoles. I've always fancied being a tadpole expert. It's a wonderful life if you become an experty tadpoleus, as they're known in the trade. You get invited out to all the smart parties and social gatherings. When smart people are making out their list for the dinner parties, they say, "Now, who can we have to make up the 10? A tadpole expert would be very nice. He could sit next to Lady Sonia." And at all the smart functions, people come up to you and say, "I hear you're a tadpole expert. Tell me, what are tadpoles really like?" And lovely ladies invite you back to their flat and say, "You know, I'm longing to hear about your tadpoles. Hang on a minute while I slip into a gossamer trench coat." I've tried over the years to become a tadpole expert, actually. I've studied the tadpole and attempted to learn everything about them. There isn't very much to learn, actually. The main thing to learn is that there are two kinds of tadpoles. There's the ones that turn into the frogs and the ones that turn into the toads. I call them the toadpole and the frog pole. Now, the only way to distinguish between the two is that the toad pole tends to turn into a toad, whereas the frog pole will tend to turn into a frog. But there's no way that I've found of predicting this. Of course, tadpoles are lovely little creatures, aren't they? They're so good-natured, and they have such lovely little smiles. It's very hard to see their little smiles, actually, because they're black all over, and they have little black mouths, and the insides of their mouths are black as well. So when they smile, it's just a little black blob. You can't really tell when they're smiling. They make lovely pets, you know, the tadpole, very faithful. The only trouble is, as soon as you get to know them properly and they start doing tricks and things and they can answer to their name, they turn into horrible toads and frogs. I can't abide toads and frogs, horrible slimy creatures that go around eating flies and laying their slime all over the place. Such a pity when you think of the lovely little tadpoles wiggling about in the jar. I used to keep tadpoles in a jar by my bedside when I was studying to be a tadpole expert. Lovely little things squiggling about. That was until I had the tragedy. I had a terrible tragedy. I had three lovely little tadpoles in my jar, Deirdre, Margaret and Beryl. Lovely little things, and I switched the light out last thing at night. And I must have had a very violent dream about gossamer trench coats or something. Because when I woke up in the morning, there they were, strewn all over my pillow, all dried up like three little raisins. I tried to revive them by throwing water all over them, but it was too late. They just went into soggy little raisins. Horrible, soggy little black raisins. Tragic business. Deirdre was just getting her first legs, too. But I suppose it was all for the best. They'd only have turned into ghastly old toads and frogs in the end and left me. It's rather a thankless life being a tadpole expert.
Peter Cook. Man is not the only threat to the denizens of our rivers and lakes. Here's a report from The Guardian.
A death with honor decision was made by the Northwest Sussex Water Board at Horsham yesterday. A directive to the board's bailiffs allows them to shoot cormorants suspected of eating any of the 1,700 pounds of the trout which had restocked Crawley's Weirwood Reservoir at Forest Row. But to be fair to the dead birds, a post-mortem examination will be made to establish their guilt or innocence.
There are other hazards which face fish nowadays, in spite of denials like this one from the Vancouver Sun.
He said it is unlikely pollution is the cause, and the fish bore no outward signs of disease. These fish are perfectly healthy, except that they're dead.
Yes, it's a major worry of our times. Just how fresh is our fresh water?
American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, they got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud. The halibut and the surgeons are being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste. Breath of air, and you'll be ready for Medicare. The city streets are really quite a thrill. If the hoods don't get you, the monoxide will. Pollution, pollution, wear a gas mask and a veil. Then you can breathe, long as you don't inhale. Things there that you can drink, but stay away from the kitchen sink, the breakfast garbage that you throw into the bay. They drink at lunch in San Jose. You see the crazy people there, like lambs to the slaughter. They're drinking the water and breathing the air.
Tom Lehrer. In spite of the threat to their environment, many freshwater creatures survive to delight or repel us. Here's Ogden Nash on the subject of one species.
Behold the duck. It does not cluck. A cluck it lacks. It quacks. It is especially fond of a puddle or pond. When it dines or sups, it bottoms ups.
Here's an extract from a rather strange letter about ducks printed in the Birmingham Gazette.
The other morning, you reported that a small quantity of washing powder put in a duck pond would make all the ducks sink to the bottom. My neighbour's little boy put a whole packet in, but the ducks still went on swimming. Macy, I wonder if you can believe everything you read in the newspapers.
Packets of washing powder are not the only objects you're likely to find in duck ponds.
Back the society of British bedstead men. Oh, but hammer on the Sussex and the dew on the west, a heart of British heritage, the heart we love the best. Every eel and fish and mill pond has a beauty all can share, but not unless it's got a big rock broken bedstead there. Filch them out of attics, we take them from our friends. We buy them in auction lots with our odds and ends. Then we drag them across the meadow where the moon is in the sky. So watch the wall, my darling, while the snake heads dead. Slowly British bedhead men is marching through the night. A desperate and dedicated group. Undercover the hideous, always keeping out of sight. For the present load of best heads must get through.
For putting broken bedsteads into pots, as a brother's solemn purpose to fulfill. For our coastal sands and beaches, or where waving willow wands mark the borders of a river, stream, or rill.
You'll always find a single laceless left-hand leather boot. Our bootless British riverbanks are shot. We leave them there at midnight. You can track a member's route by the alternating prints of boot and sock. Oh, the lily ponds of Suffolk and the hill ponds of the West are part of Britain's heritage, the part we love the best. Our river banks and seashores have a beauty all can share, provided there's a boot. Provided there's a boot. Provided there's at least one boot. Three treadless tires, a half-eaten pork pie, some oil drums, an old felt hat, a lorry load of tar blocks, and a broken bed.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. Here's a reflective little poem by Daniel Pettywood, entitled Our Pond.
I'm fond of our pond, of the superfine gloss on its moss, its pink lilies and things, and the wings of its duck. I'm keen on the green, soupy surface of some of its scum, its water-waved weeds, its three reeds, and its muck. Yesterday, as I lay and admired its thick skin, I fell in. I went walloping down till I stuck. I'm fond of our pond, but I like it much more from the shore. It was quite out of place on my face where it stuck.
A pond seems a fairly safe, containable amount of water, but sometimes water gets out of hand and floods are the result. Charles Lamb.
The first water cure was the flood, and it killed more than it cured.
One person the flood didn't kill, of course, was Noah.
There's a fellow by the name of Noah built an ark. Everybody knows he built an ark. He said, what did Noah do? He said, well, he built an ark. But very few people know about the conversation that went on between the Lord and Noah. You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. He's making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter.
Vuba, 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 vuba.
Noah. Somebody call?
Vuba, vuba, vuba.
Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah. Right. Where are you? What do you want? I've been good. I want you to build an ark. Right. What's an ark? Get some wood.
Build it. 300 cubits by 80 cubits by 40 cubits.
What's a cubit?
Let's see, a cubit. I used to know what a cubit was. Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark.
Right. Who is this real? What's going on? How come you?
you want me to do all these weird things?
I'm going to destroy the world. Right. Am I on Kansas camera?
I'm going to make it rain for 1,000 days and drown them right out. Right. Listen to this, you'll save water. Let it rain for 40 days and 40 nights and wait for the sewers to back up.
Right.
Bill Cosby. And that's nearly the end of our dip into rivers and lakes. But before we go, let's just hear an angling limerick.
There was a young fellow called Fisher who was fishing for fish in a fisher. Then a pike with a grin pulled the fisherman in. Now they're fishing the fisher for Fisher.
Well, Nick... Next week we'll be staying with watery themes and moving on to the sea. Until then, from Alfred and me...
And Alfred Marx has been going into Rivers and Lakes. The program was written by Simon Brett and produced by Richard Edis.